6.8 miles from the Nile, near the modern Egyptian town of El Araba El Madfuna, is the remnants of the oldest Egyptian city, called Abdu. Renamed by the Greeks and referred to in English as Abydos. This was a site of many ancient temples, including Seti I, and a mysterious king's list dating back thousands of years. A royal necropolis where early pharaohs were entombed was also found here, suggesting that this area was extremely significant in burials, leading to the growth of the town's importance as a cult site for Osiris. But what was so important here at this area? Experts keep digging up evidence. In November of 2016, Egypt announced the remains of a lost city alongside the mortuary temple of Seti I. A team of archaeologists from the Egyptian Ministry of Antiquities found the remains of ancient huts and graves during a dig dating back to 7,000 years ago. Some believe, however, that the significance of this find is just the beginning of not only the dating of this ancient city, but also its significant meaning in the world. What lies below the surface of this temple complex may unravel a very old story.
But this was essentially just the beginning. We know that there have been a series of quite extraordinary discoveries made at Abydos, including these huge boats which were discovered within the cemeteries there. And what is very clear is that Abydos was seen as the point that you would pick up this road that would take you into the afterlife, a road that would initially go towards the west, towards the direction of the setting sun. Abydos was arguably the most important of all of these cemeteries in Egypt, and that this tradition then continued on right the way through the Old Kingdom into the New Kingdom period, when you have this massive great temple complex built by Seti I around 1300 BC. And this is an incredibly large temple. If, as you approach it, you see these 12 incredibly massive, colossal pillars, six on either side of this gigantic entrance. And you go into this and, you know, it's like being in a giant's palace, basically. But you pass through this, you pass through all of the different chapels, and you eventually reach, you're channeled through into this corridor. And in this corridor, right the way across all of the wall, is all of the kings that ruled, not just during the dynastic period up to this point, the time of Seti I, but also it includes details of the time of the gods, the time of the demigods, going all the way back to the time of Zeptepi, the first time.
It's one of the most mysterious temple complexes found anywhere in Egypt, anywhere in the world. We don't know for sure who built this complex. We don't know for sure how long it's been there. It is called the Abydos Temple Complex, but it actually encompasses two very, very different sites. One of them is very visible to the naked eye, and this is the Seti I Temple, which is very contemporary, even in modern terms. If you look at this temple today, the architecture is just exquisite. It is beautifully, beautifully laid out. And it appears that this site is built on top of an even older, more mysterious site of very, very different architecture that is called the Osirian. The nature of the construction and the apparent dating of that site is contemporary with what we find on the Giza Plateau. The legacy that was left to us today is simply the technology, the extraordinary technology, and the precision of creating these structures in the places where we find them today. Now, while the Sphinx itself was carved from native stone, the Osirian appears to have been created from the granite coming in from the Aswan quarries. And the way that these structures are situated suggests a dating contemporary with the Giza Plateau. We're talking right at the end of the last ice age. The ice age ended about 12,000 years before present. The unsettled weather pattern for 4,000 years after that. So we're talking 10 to 12,000 BP before present as very likely time frames for the building of the Abydos complex itself.
Officially, Egyptian history begins in 3100 to 3200 BC. The fact that a city was found in Abydos that dates from approximately 7,000 years ago shows how old the site is. It's important to remember that Abydos is the site of Osiris. He lived in Abydos, home of his main temple, the Osirian. Osiris died around the time of the last great flood, aka 10,000 years ago. So finding a 7,000-year-old city in this location reveals how ancient the site truly is. It is very likely that the city was found 400 meters away from Seti I's temple. It probably belonged to the Shemsis, Osiris's followers, otherwise known as the Watching Angels in the Bible. Egyptian funerary texts tell us that Osiris lived there with his Shemsis, his entourage.
This mysterious temple complex, called the Osirian, is built at such a level that it fills with water. Could this be an ancient technology dating back to 10,000 years ago? Matthias De Stefano explains that the technology presented in this subterranean Osirian temple connects back to Atlantis.
This temple has been built as a point of connection. What people in Atlantean times did was to use water as a way of bringing information. So they would store information in the water. And in that way, they would also transmit the information through the blood by the bath, like many all other cultures did. So this temple was about to put heaven and earth both together in the blood of people, so they could be, they could have the information of both parts of the reality as one. And of course, as the pyramids, the way of building it was to bring the stones from far away to by sound. The technology was a sound, so all the structure was about how to bring the information of the cosmos into the blood, into the cells, by vibration, by sound. So this is why this is the first place in history where you find the flower of life.
In my opinion, there is an irrefutable link between the Osirian and Atlantis. The Edfu texts that mention Atlantis speak of a temple called the Bu Anem, which translates to the place of the cistern. This corresponds exactly to the Osirian. In my opinion, the Bu Anem is the prototype of the Osirian. It must have been the same type of structure in both Atlantis and Abydos.
If the Osirian temple connects back to Atlantis, then is it possible that Osiris himself connects back to Atlantis?
Since 2007, I've been working on an important thesis which explains that Osiris is the god found known as Enki at Sumer. They are one and the same. Sumerian texts constantly refer to Enki welcoming nobles and commoners in his aquatic temple. numerous Sumerian and Akkadian seals show Enki in a structure with columns and surrounded by water. It is clear that it is the Osirian temple. In my opinion, Enki and Osiris are one and the same. He was Enki, Lord of the Earth, to the Sumerians in Azar, his true Egyptian name. And Osiris is the Greek one, to the Egyptians. He lived for a long time in the Osirian temple, where he welcomed his people and preached the good word. Both Enki in Sumer and Osiris in Egypt were close to the people and taught them. Enki in Sumer is the famous biblical serpent. Certain tablets refer to him as the serpent. An important element linked to both Abydos and my theory that Enki is Osiris is that Enki regularly lived in an aquatic temple known as Abzu, according to Sumerian texts. The site of Abydos is pronounced Abju in Egyptian, which means the reliquary hill. Why hill? We know there was a hill over the Osirian temple on which grew trees. When does Enki become Osiris? The Sumerian tablets mention Enki with the Nungal, his entourage, who will become the Shemsis in Egypt, and the Anunna, Enlil's followers, or Sets, in Egypt. At first, Enki is very present. Many tablets explain that he came to Earth with the gods and that he settles in the Karsag Mountains and creates the garden known as Eden. But it is obvious in the Sumerian texts that Enki does not get along with the Anunna. Enki eventually leaves the Anunna clan and goes to live in the Atlantean islands and in Egypt, which is where he settles and creates his site at Abydos. This is where he officially becomes Azar, or Osiris.
Osiris was one of the main gods of Egyptian culture, related, of course, to the main trinity, which was with Isis and Horus. And the history of them is something that is more related with the first pharaohs and the first lineage of the kings and queens of this land and how they started to resurrect by mummification and so on. So it's kind of the god of the afterlife of the mummification. But that's the Egyptian point of view of history, but its history comes way before and way beyond in time. And it's more related with the families of Atlantis that came to this land around 12 to 11,000 years ago. So during that period of time, when the civilization ended, they came here. So one of the first families that came to make the settlements here was the family of Osiris, which of course was not his name.
So there appears to be a link between the Osirian and the cult of Enki in Sumeria. And this comes from the fact that the main temple of Enki at Eridu, in what is today southern Iraq, involved the creation of a structure where the waters of the Euphrates would come in and flood the lower levels, exactly the same as the Osirian at Abydos. And although we know that the Osirian quite clearly was associated with the cult of Osiris, and what was going on in Sumeria was connected with the god Enki, we have to ask ourselves whether there is a relationship between these two gods.
Could the Sumerian Enki actually be the same person referred to in Egypt as Osiris? If this is so, could he have lived on the Atlantean islands and then colonized a settlement in Egypt referred to now as Abydos? Experts point to a famous road that could have been where the followers of Osiris traveled from the coast of Africa to Abydos.
In the 5th century BC, with the help of Egyptian texts, Herodotus set out to map the route taken by Osiris's followers after the flood which destroyed Atlantis. Egyptians were very familiar with the story of Atlantis, as it is told in great detail on the walls of the Edfu temples. He went from the pillars of Hercules to Mount Atlas, then mapped out the route known today as the Path of the Dead, through the Libyan desert, to Thebes and Abydos, and probably Dendera. It's very interesting to see that Herodotus was able to recreate this route, which contemporary archaeologists are quite familiar with, since there are traces throughout the Libyan desert of this road that has since become a trade route.
Atlantis was a civilization settled all around the islands in the Atlantic Ocean, around the islands of Green Cape, of Canary Islands, and Azores. The Canary Islands were kind of the most important place through where they started to spread around the world. And they took different paths to get to the Nile, because the Nile was their goal. And from the Canary Islands is where they took the path to something that we called that time Tagok. And Tagok was what we call now Iberia. And they had the White Pass and the Black Pass. And this, the White Pass was the northern, and the Black Pass was the southern, that was Morocco today, that is Morocco today, all the Atlas mountains. And through the south, they went through the fertile valleys in all the Sahara. In that time, there was no Sahara as we know it today. There was more green regions. So they crossed all through that region until they reached by the north, the delta of the Nile, and by the south, they reach the center of the Nile, where now you can find Abydos.
If this is true, where can we find in the texts evidence of this ancient Osiris-Enki clan?
My theory is that the southern part of Atlantis was in the Canary Islands and extended north to the Azores Islands. Atlantis was disrupted several times. There were numerous floods, as mentioned in the Edfu texts. Atlanteans regularly faced major problems and were constantly forced to rebuild. In my view, the southern part corresponds to the Canary Islands, which comes from the Latin Canariae Insulae, the island of dogs. Not because dogs were rampant on the island when it was discovered, but because ancient legends tell of humans with dog heads living there. Again, we find the idea that Osiris's followers, the Shemsis, were present in the southern part of Atlantis. One of his epithets was Ken Tiamentiu, the foremost of Westerners, who has a wolf head. He is the first follower to bring Western culture, Atlantis, to Egypt. Anubis also has a wolf head and happens to be one of Osiris's sons. After his father's death, he becomes a kind of funerary god. He was also connected to Osiris through his wolf head.
If ancient texts depict the followers of Osiris and their connection to Atlantis, where might we find evidence that the wife or sister of Osiris was also connected to Atlantis? Experts point to the symbol of the cow horns.
Isis is the answer. Close to the temple of Abydos in southern Egypt is another beautiful temple, that of Dendera. And the main patron deity there is Hathor. She is the cow goddess. But in addition to this, it is also said to be the birthplace of the goddess Isis. In fact, there is actually a special building that you can visit to this day that's said to be the very spot that the goddess Isis was born. And of course, Isis was the sister of Osiris, and Osiris was the main god of Abydos. So there was a relationship between these two cult centres, one associated with Isis and the other associated with her brother Osiris.
In the Critias, Plato explains that the Atlantean culture is linked to cow horns. Interestingly, cows dominate the site of Dendera, which is intimately linked to Isis. In the temple of Ramses II at Abydos is a representation of the royal pike adorned with cow horns. It is a very ancient cult. Stone braziers in the shape of cow horns are also found in Egypt. Cow horns are a distinctive symbol related to Atlantis, as explained by Plato. It's fascinating to find these elements both at Abydos and Dendera.
Abydos might have been the home of the god Osiris, but it is known today as the home of the cult of Osiris. Anton explains that the cult of Osiris didn't happen till after his death, and his death plays a significant role in our history and understanding of existence here on this planet.
The cult of Osiris before his death is simply meeting with the god and following his teachings. After his death at Abydos 10,000 years ago, close to the Osirian temple, an annual celebration is held to honor his death and bring him back to life.
Abydos was one of the most ancient centers of worship of the god Osiris. Why? Osiris was the god of the dead god that the pharaoh became in death, obviously. But it was more than this, because before even Osiris was associated with Abydos, it was the place of the cult of another god by the name of Kenti Amenti. And this was a dog in a canine form, most obviously a jackal. And this jackal was seen to be the guide of the soul as it journeyed through the underworld into the afterlife. And eventually, Kenti Amenti became a part of the cult of Osiris. Once you have passed through the magnificent temple of Seti I at Abydos, you come out into an open courtyard. And if you then look down, you see this incredible underground structure, and it is made of massive cyclopean blocks. Now, these are huge blocks that almost look as if they've been put in place by giants, and this forms a rectilinear structure in the center of which is a raised platform or island. And this would have been surrounded in the past by water that would have flowed in from the Nile. And within the island itself is these massive pillars that had these lintels on top of them. And the whole thing was covered over with a roof, and quite clearly was used for rituals and initiations, probably to do with the cult of the god Osiris. Why Osiris? Well, because according to the most ancient versions of the story of his death, he was buried on an island within a tomb. And so what the Osirian represents is a symbolic tomb of the god Osiris, and that rituals to do with the cult of Osiris would have been conducted at this location right the way through dynastic times.
If the cult was based on his death, what story has been told here for many years?
The story of Osiris is a very fascinating one, and it tells of the betrayal of this god by his brother Set, or Seth, who is the trickster god. And it was said that he tricked Osiris into a tailor-made coffin, which was then nailed down and thrown into the River Nile. And of course, this killed Osiris, but that his sister and wife, Isis, came along, found the body, and was able to resurrect the god. But then Set himself found the body once again and chopped it up into 14 parts. And those parts were sprinkled throughout the whole of Egypt.
And here, the plot thickens. Experts point out that something mysterious has been hidden in this story. Something that took place at Abydos. Experts point to a mystical system which holds the key.
Gematria is a Hebrew mystical system of being able to break down words into individual characters which are assigned a specific numerical value. And when these values are brought together, it creates a total, a number that has a mystical significance. And it would seem as if this is something which was also found in Greek tradition as well, and became associated with the cult of Osiris.
Osiris's death is encoded in numbers in the Egyptian funerary texts, similar to gematria in the Kabbalah. Osiris's body was cut into 14 pieces. Jesus, who was also crucified, made 14 stops along the way of the cross. Osiris was murdered by 72 assassins. This is a reoccurring number in many traditions. The 72 names of God, the 72 languages spoken at Babel, the 72 archons in Gnosticism. It is a symbolic number that is intimately linked to both the Ancient and New Testaments, and particularly the story of Jesus Christ.
Could one of the greatest stories of death and rebirth have symbolism with this story of Osiris?
The lifetime of Osiris represents one of the greatest mysteries in Egyptian mythology as well as world mythology, because there are so many parallels between the life of Osiris and the life of later icons and later mystics and later saints, including Jesus of Nazareth.
The death of Osiris in Egyptian culture was obscured for a long time. It was unbearable for the ancient Egyptians. To explain his death, they coded it into the funerary texts. There isn't a single text that explains the event clearly, although you can find it in bits and pieces in all the funerary texts. It is nonetheless coded into all the funerary texts. The element of the story that stands out is that over 10,000 years ago, when war raged in the Atlantean Islands and the planet between Mars and Jupiter exploded, Osiris was at Abydos with his entourage. They were all massacred. It isn't clear what exactly happened, but there must have been traitors on Osiris's side who opened access to the Abydos site. Osiris was dragged, half drowned in the Nile that flows at Abydos, and tied to a tree, crucified and disemboweled. It is even said in certain texts that his heart was ripped out and devoured by Set. A civilizing god who is tied to a tree and crucified is reminiscent of certain New Testament passages. The Egyptian funerary texts are quite clear regarding the place where Osiris was murdered. It is explicitly said that it was Abydos. A small channel runs through the Abydos, known in Egyptian as Nejit, the place where the father was bound. Once more, we encounter the idea of Osiris being attached to a tree at Abydos. As I mentioned earlier, the Sumerian tablet BM 100,046 speaks of the son of life being attached to a tree and sacrificed by a cruel demon. His body is recovered by his two sisters and is resurrected thanks to Ereshkigal, the queen of Kigal, the underground beneath Giza. Osiris died at Abydos because that was where he lived and taught. It is symbolic because it is the place where he taught humanity the secrets of tools. This idea can also be found in tablet BM 100,046, where it is said that the Son of Life was criticized for teaching the people about the Tree of Knowledge.
If Osiris Enki died here at this ancient site of Abydos 10,000 years ago, crucified, could it be that this message was a turning point in humanity?
The death of Osiris around 10,000 BC represents a turning point in history. The Egyptian funerary texts that speak of his death date back to 2500 BC. The time lag between his death and the texts that speak of it is at least 8,000 years. This was a civilizing god who, similar to Jesus Christ, offered teachings and was massacred because his message was disliked. His message has lived on over millennia. Abydos was a landmark for millennia. People from the Near East, Far East, and the Mediterranean came to mourn his passing at his tomb. This went on for a millennia. It's unfathomable. It's difficult for us to imagine because our reference point is Jesus Christ, 2,000 years ago. We're talking about 8 or 10,000 years ago here. It's monumental. His message has lived on and can still be found in text today. We find the same story in different myths, be they Sumerian, Akkadian, Egyptian, or African. Traces of Osiris echo in Dogon mythology, with a sacrifice of Nomo on a tree. The evil coyote, Pale Fox, who is determined to kill him, represents Set, or Enlil. The story is archetypical and cyclical. Following Osiris's death, the Chronicles of Horus begin. He is said to be the reincarnation of Osiris. The texts explain that Isis extracted Osiris's genes and gave birth to Horus. He followed a similar trajectory as his father, although he was much more of a warrior and set out to battle Set's forces. It is an archetypical story, including that of Jesus, that repeats itself until the message is heard. Is humanity capable of receiving it?
So why exactly is the death of Osiris and the legend surrounding it so important? So important to us, but also important to the dynastic Egyptians? And the answer appears to be simple. It's about the whole concept of death and resurrection, not just of us human beings, but of nature and of the cycles of the sun each year. All of these were these death and rebirth gods that would hammer home this whole idea of the importance of death and the resurrection in the afterlife. And of course, that also brings us to Christianity. We have similar ideas with the death of Jesus and his resurrection after 3 days, because very clearly the whole early cult of Christianity borrowed a lot of its ideas from pre-existing pagan gods who existed in the area of the Near East prior to the first century AD. And all of these just tell us how important it is that when we die, we will be resurrected.
The story of Enki and Osiris, and possibly even Jesus, is of a great man that teaches humans how to understand the universe and their connections with God. Is it possible? These teachings keep coming to us until we understand their true meaning.
We have to understand something about ourselves that pushes the boundaries of our limits and allows us to understand what we're being shown. Osiris may represent that from a time that predates Christianity. My sense is from my Egyptian guides, from the Bedouins that I've worked with and their mystical traditions, from the stories that were handed down from father to son in the lineage of the Egyptian guides, is that the Osirian is the hall of records, if you will, for the Osirian wisdom. This is where the information is stored.
Osiris represented the experiences of the universe, the process of acknowledging, the process of living, of learning about life. And this was the idea that the Atlantean people had about the representative of the families in the culture. The humans were trying to represent the concept of the universe. So it's not that he and the other ones were gods, but they were people that were trying to incarnate the concept of the cosmos so they could teach others how the cosmos works. So he was the representation of the experience of the universe.
We need to fight for our freedom. It's always the same story. It's relevant to what the world is currently going through. We all need to fight for our freedom. It was fought for in the past by humans, non-humans, superhumans, and gods. The myths and texts are clear that they fought for the freedom of humanity. We can't forget this, and we need to continue the fight. It's important to protect individual freedom.
Buried beneath the dirt of this ancient city of Abydos lies not only the subterranean temple of the Osirian, but a legend of a man that came from the islands off the coast of Africa and built his place of refuge so he could teach humans about the universe. Here, for thousands of years, the story has been told and retold, and quite possibly, we have adapted this story into our modern lives. Stories, religions, and codes all lead back to this main teaching. Could it be that deep down we all remember that we are the universe? And we are more powerful than we can even imagine.
Science is a living body of information. It's not static. It's not fixed. It's designed to be constantly updated when new discoveries come to light.
One of the things that's echoed in the ancient stories around the world, whether it's not it's Plato talking about Atlantis or the ancient Egyptians in the Temple of Sais, is that we find that they discuss how the civilizations have been destroyed from periods of great flooding, but also extreme heat and fire. It's about a totality of all of these different catastrophic events that have led to the disappearance and destruction of these pre-Diluvian civilizations.
There are petroglyphs all over the world with the same exact shapes telling us that this was a worldwide plasma event that was documented and recorded by countless cultures, including the people of Easter Island and their Rongo Rongo script.
There's no cultural memory in humanity of how they made these megalithic structures. There's no recollection of the engineering technology that's required to create these structures because it wasn't their technology. It was the gods' technology. That's why we can't do it again.
We're writing a new story right now. We have to, because the evidence no longer supports the story of the past. This is where our new story begins.